Greetings. I'm Dr. Gayathri Acharya, Cardiology Fellow at Mayo Clinic. Today we will be discussing critical care and the cardiac ICU. I'm joined by my colleague, Dr. Gregory Barsness, who specializes in this area. Welcome, Dr. Barsness.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you. Dr. Barsness, let's start with the history of the cardiac intensive care unit. How does this play a role in the management of our patients?
That's a good question. So really, it's a fascinating story. The history of cardiology and cardiac intensive care moves together. In the last century, cardiology itself has gone from really an observational practice to one of a more invasive, direct management sort of practice. And so in the 1920s, when cardiologists were primarily performing observational duties with heart failure and congenital heart disease, technology at the time evolved to the point where they could actually monitor and do some prediction and some resuscitation. And so by the 1950s and 60s, there was actually a push to greater intensity of management. And in fact, by 1961, there were a couple of abstracts describing critical or cardiology and coronary care units to manage and better identify and support patients with acute coronary syndromes.
And since that time, how has cardiology intensive care evolved?
Again, a fun topic. So in 1961, when this was first described by Wilburn, and that's an interesting story by itself, actually. Wilburn was a private practice cardiologist in Los Angeles who submitted an abstract describing a nurse-led unit to support patients with ACS. His abstract was rejected by Circulation and never saw the light of day, except that for a couple of years, Circulation would publish abstracts that were rejected. And so his abstract was published, somewhat forgotten, but in the coming years, he did speak to this topic, and actually it grew support with Julian and others who also submitted this idea of a nursing-led unit to support patients with ACS, identify life-threatening arrhythmias, and treat them promptly. They thought that they could save lives. And in fact, with the first CCU opening in Kansas City in 1962 and further innovations and new units opening over the coming years, by the late 1960s, there were widely dispersed CCUs with actual data supporting the practice, so that in some data sets, there was up to 75% reduction in mortality in hospital in patients with acute coronary syndromes cared for in a CCU practice. So it really had a major impact in this area over a very short time.
That's fantastic. With how many CCUs we have across, you know, the United States and varied practices, what are the models of care that make a CCU or intensive care unit successful?
So there are as many different types of CCUs as there are hospitals and practices. So what distinguishes various practices and CCUs is the staffing, the technology available, and the resources brought to bear. And so what has been shown over many years in the medical intensive care unit data is that high intensity care with intensivists and specialists in the practice of supporting multi-organ failure and other processes, those patients cared for in those kind of units do better, less mortality than patients in less intense care. And so that has been brought to bear on the cardiac intensive care unit as well. And so currently, we look to have units based on local resources, local expertise. And so one of the issues is whether a unit has cardiologists or intensivists. And so there are mixed units where patients are cared for by medical intensive care people or anesthesiologists and or cardiologists. And there are a variety of those. In academic centers, it's been shown that about two-thirds of hospitals, academic centers, have a dedicated CICU. And about half of those are developed and comprised of what we call a closed system, whereby patients are admitted from their normal caregiver to a special team that practices intensive care at that hospital. And so it's a closed unit because it's a set group of people caring for the patient, not just everybody with hospital admitting privileges. And although only about half of the intensive care units or CICUs in the country have that sort of closed system, I think most people, and it's been shown in surveys, that most people feel that that sort of system has some benefit, although there's increased cost associated with that. There are staffing issues, resource allocation issues, and so there are some downsides as well. Regardless of the specific type of model, I think some things are important. So adequate staffing. We think that in the CICU world, which is no longer a CCU, no longer a coronary care unit, but a cardiac intensive care unit, you really need the support of intensive care. You really need an intensivist. And there are a lot of models for that intensive care support as well. And so we have combined cardiologist critical care people. We have intensivists who support a cardiologist, and we have intensivists who are able to come in and assist when needed. And so regardless of the type of model, the ones that work best have frequent and robust support from those intensivists to provide care for these multidimensional patients. And you need ability to provide the technology or have access to the technologies that these very complicated patients may need. Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Barsness, we were talking about transitioning from a CCU, a coronary care unit, to a cardiac intensive care unit. What's the modern demographic of patients that we're caring for?
Again, a terrific question. You know, and it's not, so this is all not just in a name. So it used to be the CCU or the coronary care unit. Now we don't even see patients anymore with coronary specific problems. I mean, they have coronary disease. That's the foundation. So the cardiac intensive care unit is a format to care for these multidimensional patients with dramatic, impressive comorbidities and disease risk. And so we've shown in our group, Dr. Courtney Bennett and others have demonstrated that over the last decade, we have had fairly consistent mortality rates or survival rates. And so the in-hospital, in-unit survival has actually been maintained despite a twofold increase in diabetes, twofold increase in chronic kidney disease, cancer, established coronary disease, and even ventilator management, non-invasive or invasive ventilatory support. So the types of patients that we're seeing are much sicker. Their SOFA scores, their Apache scores are much higher. And their age is much greater. So we no longer see the 60-year-old with a myocardial infarction. It's it's very often elderly patients, which necessitates a different type of thought process, a different type of team and management strategy to deal with all these comorbidities.
And you mentioned Dr. Courtney Bennett, one of our new cardiac intensivists. How are we training our cardiologists to become cardiac intensive care physicians?
So we're very fortunate here at Mayo. We have a dedicated training program to really develop a career pathway for people who are interested in doing cardiac intensive care. So these are dual-trained cardiologists and critical care physicians who develop the skills necessary to really have a lifelong dedication to cardiac critical care, expertise in team management, quality, and research involved with intensive care. So it's a long road. I think it's a difficult road, but it's quite rewarding among the group that we've had here.
Right. And our cardiac intensivists, especially our new faculty, are very involved in research. What are some areas that we need to see in terms of research so we can continue to progress the intensive care unit?
It's one of the exciting things about the area. Cardiology critical care is wide open as far as research, both in practice. So we have Brandon Wiley is really doing a lot of innovative things with our our patient care algorithms, just how we, what kind of team members we need, how we deal among ourselves, what the collaborative efforts are, what the communication patterns ought to be, what staffing patterns ought to be. Research in that area is critical. Quality remains wide open. And the fact is that even though we know a lot about critical care, we know a lot about delirium management, say, or ventilatory management, sepsis management, all those things that come to bear in the general ICU population may or may not be true in the cardiac intensive care population. So transfusion thresholds, ventilatory management, length of support, VADs, those sorts of things are wide open for research. And so we have ample opportunity to develop protocols and algorithms to explore. All of this would be impossible as an individual center or as an individual practitioner. But luckily, one of the innovations that's occurred over the very recent years is a more collaborative group, both regional. Here in Minnesota, we have some collaboration, but also nationally, there are a variety of groups getting together to really share best practices, develop registries to track progress in the field, which is essential for our ongoing efforts.
Absolutely, and quality measures and tracking our quality is so important for advancing how we care for our patients. What are some other areas that are ripe for future development?
Certainly quality is important, and quality permeates every aspect of care. So from our rounding patterns to our mortality reviews to our collaboration communication efforts. We've got a variety of quality. In fact, maybe too many quality improvement projects going on. But it just speaks to how exciting the area is, how novel a lot of these things are. Other things that we can think about in the future are just expanding our reach in these areas. And so not only quality here at our institution, but quality at other places. So maybe using technology, we can have more of an input into kind of the electronic ICU, eICU sort of realm with assisting other centers at caring for these very complex patients. Because the truth is, what it's going to come down to, or has come down to already, is cost. Resources, our scarce resources and resource allocation is an essential component of best practices for what we do. And so if we're able to expand our reach and help other centers and other practitioners do the very best for their patients, we can have a tremendous impact. And I think that's going to be exciting. And just the whole, and part of that actually is developing better prognostication to determine who is best cared for locally, who might be cared for at a specialized center, who may be best managed with palliative resources and other things that we have at our disposal.
Absolutely. Are there any challenges that, as a group, cardiac intensivists face that would be things we need to think about as we go forward?
I have a few concerns. So as as an old guy, I think that we have developed our cardiology practice in a specific manner that suits us. With the new practitioners, for the new critical care cardiologists, it's a very challenging job. I think job satisfaction is high, but burnout is high. So I worry about avenues for growth in the field, for avoiding burnout, for maintaining a sane practice. And so I have personal concerns about that. And we're working at figuring out how to evolve the practice to maintain skills that these people have while maintaining sanity. And I think it is an interesting thing to consider. So there's just the personal aspects of the caregivers themselves. The team also needs nourishment. There's a lot of excitement and a lot of difficulty in the critical care world. And so maintaining adequate collaboration, adequate communication, a good functioning team requires more than just assembling a group and letting them go. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really requires some oversight. So organizational efforts are really critical.
Absolutely. As a member of that team, I can speak to that as well. It's good when the team can all communicate together, and a good infrastructure certainly helps that along. And in that regard, not only the nuclear team mm-hmm. of the cardiac intensive care unit, but also collaborating with surgeons, have we seen a benefit in how we communicate with our surgical colleagues because of the infrastructure of the cardiac intensive care unit?
That's a great topic. And so we've been trying to facilitate that. You know, we're lucky again because I think we've always had fairly robust communication lines and here at our institution. But I think having people who speak the language, having the critical care cardiologists who can speak the language of intensive critical care with the VAD surgeon and with the transplant surgeon and with the cardiac surgeon. As an interventional cardiologist myself, you know, I'm much more versed in speaking with somebody who's going to do bypass on the patient than speaking about some other things perhaps than others. So having that background and being able to go about the hospital, go to work in the different units, and develop these relationships. It's brought us closer as a critical care community here at our institution, and I think globally and nationally.
Great. Well, Dr. Barsness, thank you very much for these very important insights, and thank you for joining us on theheart.org on Medscape Cardiology.